Hi, welcome to Off Script. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, we're taking a look at Gladiator 2. The Ridley Scott sword and sandal epic is out. And the sequel, of course, to Gladiator, starring Russell Crowe. We have watched the follow-up. We went and saw it in theaters. Excited to talk about it. We'll get into that first. Then we're going to talk about Wicked. We went and saw Wicked. We had no choice. Had to go see Wicked for the weekend, right? Wicked and Gladiator. That's what's rocking the box office this week. And we're also going to talk about that box office rocking in news. Wicked's a good time. Stick around for the review. We're going to take a look at our December 2020. This next month is kind of insane at the movies. If you've been listening to the show a while, or you've just been keeping up with movies, you know that Christmas is always a big holiday at the movies, and this year is really only different because there's so many bangers coming out. And Andy put together this incredible preview of what's coming out. We're going to go down it film by film. Not too many movies, I promise. We're going to get to that in between our reviews. Before we get to that, we need to get to the news. It's a bit of a light news week and a bit of a light watch week, Andy, because we didn't watch any other movies for the show. Sometimes we watch like something that we'll talk about just to kind of open it up, get us going here. But I didn't watch anything extra. It was 6 hours of movies between Wicked and Gladiator. They're insanely long.
It's been, it's been a short week because we recorded on Thursday and we're doing a Monday show, which we hardly ever do. And so it's been a bit of a short week. No time for extras. I watch these on Friday and Sunday to make sure we got them in time for the show.
Yeah, but you know, hey, I'm glad we're here. That's all right. We don't always have to watch extra stuff, namely because I don't always watch extra stuff, and you normally do. So I'm glad that we're coming in on the same foot this week. United we stand for episode 274 of Off Script. We should jump into the news. And like you said, short week means light week. The box office is what we're talking about this week. Big numbers. Wicked opens to $112.5 million. Good Lord. And Gladiator 2 comes in at a cozy $55 million. Like half. A little less than half of what Wicked made, which I think is about to be expected, right? What do you think of the box office this week?
Well, in an effort to recreate the phenomenon that was Barbenheimer from summer 2023, we have Glicked, which I keep saying Glicked instead of, but Glicked. Gladiator and Wicked, two huge movies, highly anticipated, both coming out in the same week. Wicked, one of the best openings of the year, the best opening for a musical ever, and it's not even close. The second highest is like Into the Woods at around $30 million, so almost $100 million, $80 million more than the next musical in line. And Gladiator 2, a very respectable $55 million, and it's actually over... $220 million globally, because it actually released last week internationally to get out of the way of Moana. And so it's actually been out for a week overseas. So it's raking in a lot of money, too. It did have a huge $250 million budget. This one, I mean, Wicked probably did as well, or close to that. So, but they're hitting their numbers, and it's been a good weekend at the movies. There were, we'll definitely get into them, but it's been a big weekend. People have been excited. There's been lots of memes, lots of discussion, talk, think pieces. It's a good time, good weekend for the movies.
Yeah, when I used to work at the movies in high school, I quickly discovered a fun fact that I like to share with most people who kind of talk about the movies, and they're like, what's something cool that, you know, about the industry that not a lot of people know? And it's that the busiest day of the movies every year around the country is Christmas Day. Christmas Day is the busiest, right? Other big holidays, close follow-up. Thanksgiving is no different. Everybody goes to the movies right around Thanksgiving. Dinner's over, or you got the family in town. You need somewhere to go for 3 hours where you don't have to talk to or look at each other. You go to the movies. It sounds bonkers, but I swear it's true. So a lot of studios want to line things up big for Thanksgiving week, right? And I was surprised to see things getting out of the way of Disney's Moana, because I figured, okay, Moana 2 is going to be fine, you know? But let's not underestimate a Disney animated sequel. It is on track to do huge numbers. So big, in fact, yes, that Universal wanted to give it some ample time. So they put out Wicked the week before so everybody can go see it and talk about it around the dinner table. And then Gladiator also getting out of the way of it is just a laugh. I think out of these two movies, like, but great opens for both, for sure. But I think Wicked's got legs. I think Wicked might fly. Gladiator 2, however, I don't think is going to have a ton of word of mouth, strictly because A, we'll talk about the movie here in a second, but B, dudes don't like share a whole lot like that. They're not like, oh, dude, you got to go see Gladiator 2. It's so sick. Whereas like the Wicked audience is like on fire. I've been seeing memes all weekend. People are talking about it. Wicked has a lot of people are holding space for Wicked, and like I think that's going to carry it a lot further. They're talking about doing sing-alongs in December, like big numbers, but like are only expected to grow. The big question is, will it break $1 billion? What do you think, Andy? Is Wicked gonna hit a billy?
It's all about the legs. I mean, the opening weekend's got to be huge. You got to definitely hit over 100 million. I think it will fall short. I think it would have needed to open closer to 200 million to hit that. But you never know. There's not a lot of competition outside of Moana next week for several weeks until Christmas. So it could have legs. And sometimes box office actually increases sometimes from week to week. You might even have like... Usually everything dips a certain percentage. Sometimes you might get a bump. We saw that with Inside Out 2, which actually started to do better in the subsequent week. So it could. It's definitely going to be one of the highest grossing of the year, I think. Speaking of which, I just saw an article that Beetlejuice just closed its run at $450 million. It's a huge win for that movie. I think it was under $100 million budget. Venom The Last Dance, Venom 3, also just... It continues to do well, almost hitting the $500 million mark. So some big winners.
It's so funny because one of the funny things about doing a podcast for as long as we've done it is there are weeks you can go back and listen to me talk about how Beetlejuice is probably going to be a bomb. Months where I was like, who wants to see Beetlejuice 2? Who cares? Tim Burton's washed up. He doesn't have it anymore, right? Man's washed. Like, and then Venom The Last Dance, I know is a big deal, but like, I didn't think it was going to break like the highest grossing films of the year list. Like, good Lord. I like to say that we're right all the time on Offscript, and we often are thematically, but there are definitely times when I listen back to like what was a financial success in the year versus what did I shit talk on my little podcast here. And it's often the same. It's often the same list. And that's just the way it goes, I think. The critics have never had their pulse, their fingers on the pulse of the audience. And the audience has never had their fingers on the pulse of the critics. And that's okay, I think. Right. We should get into the movies, I think. Like we said, light news week, which means more time to talk about cinema, which is what we're doing here. Andy's taking the first film of the week this week. Excited to talk about it. Andy, please take it away.
Gladiator 2. So this is the long-awaited follow-up and sequel to 2000's Gladiator, which, of course, starred Russell Crowe as General Maximus, the story of a general betrayed who became a slave, became a gladiator, rose up through the ranks to challenge the Emperor of Rome. Huge epic in the year 2000. I remember it was a moment of we are so back. The movies are back, baby, because that movie was huge. It was so successful. I remember seeing it in theaters. Everyone was talking about it. Everyone was quoting it. And it ushered in a new era of sword and sandal epics. We got Kingdom of Heaven a few years later. We got Troy. It really revitalized that genre. It won Best Picture. Russell Crowe won Best Actor for that role, even though that's not really his best role in the film. So huge thing. And this has had several kind of gestations to try to make a sequel. At one point, there was a script floating around called Gladiator Christ Killer, where Russell Crowe, even though he had died in the first film, he was like being reincarnated and was involved with Jesus Christ and also wars throughout the centuries and culminated with Russell Crowe in Vietnam. like totally wacky script by Nick Cave. That was all eventually abandoned. And what we have now, Ridley Scott came together with David Scarpa, with who he worked on Napoleon with, to bring us this new script following. And we'll get into the story now. Lucius, played by Paul Mescal, who's the son of Lucilla in the first film. He's a young boy in the first film. Now he's a grown man. He's living in North Africa. Their city is attacked by the Romans. He's taken prisoner. It is kind of a rehash of the first film. He's taken prisoner, becomes a slave, becomes a gladiator, rises up through the ranks to challenge the emperors and the people that be. It changes a little bit more in that it tries to be a little bit more about the corruption of Rome, where we meet Denzel Washington's Macrinus, who's a very wealthy person based on a real life person that we all know and love in real life, who, you know, also wants to be around power and is scheming and backstabbing and He's just doing a great job. It also features Pedro Pascal as General Acacius, who's not quite in the film enough. Connie Nielsen returns from the first film, and we have Joseph Quinn as one of the two kind of crazy twin emperors. We have a lot of action, a little bit of romance. Again, Sword and Sandal is back with some changes from the first film. A lot going on, lots to talk about. Zach, what do you think?
I think Gladiator 2 is more of a vibes movie. It's more of a vibes movie than like a substance movie. And it's a shame because it's a great looking movie, dude. Ridley Scott can do Sword and Sandal so good. We covered Napoleon last holiday. He did a fantastic job in that. Not Sword and Sandal, but historical epic no less. And like returning to the time of gladiatorial combat, like it's a little, you know, you wonder if the man still got it. Is he going to bring it back in the same way that Gladiator did? Is it going to be the same energy? And the energy, I think, is the same. But the script's kind of weak. And, like, our lead, Paul Mescal, like, kind of didn't have a lot to do in the movie. Like, which makes him a little weak narratively. And while he's a strong character and a big presence, obviously, for Rome, representing, like, the spirit of freedom, it's got a lot of characters. And it's a little... It kind of doesn't work great, but there's a lot that does work really good in it. Denzel Washington's fantastic. Visuals are really great. I like a lot of the performances, even the ones that are kind of out there and wacky, like what Joseph Quinn's doing. Like, I think it's a good time, but I just don't think it's like good, good. It's good. It's fine. Gladiator 2 is fine, I think. Andy, what'd you think?
So my theater was packed, and it made me think like this is the like kind of take the whole family, take your dad to see kind of movie. It's kind of the two movies a year crowd because the script is very weak. Like the plot kind of doesn't, A, it's a rehash, and then B, it starts to not really make sense in the second half. And our characters aren't very well thought out. Like when you think back to the first Gladiator, we had a very clear, simple story. We had epic characters. Like the palace intrigue and the palace drama was as interesting as the gladiatorial scenes in the original film. And that's what's missing in Gladiator 2 is the drama between our characters, between like there's almost too many people. We don't get enough time with the crazy twin emperors there. Like, why are they bad? Well, they're bad because they're bad. We're not really given enough reason to not like them. And same thing even with Paul Mescal is supposed to be like this angry. He's a gladiator full of rage. And you never really see him be angry. He's actually pretty chill the whole movie. It doesn't really make sense. I think everyone's doing the best with what they can. The standout here is, of course, Denzel Washington, who is acting everyone under the table. I don't know how he does it because he's over the top, but not too much. I feel like Joseph Quinn's a little bit too much, but Denzel Washington just hits the notes perfectly. He's having so much fun. He's seen chewing, stealing every scene he's in, not even trying. He just knows the right amount to go. And he really makes this work. Without him, this movie may not work at all.
Yeah, it's a long film at 2 hours 45, or just a little shorter. And it is dense in a way that I think is unhelpful to that runtime. Like, there's a lot of characters, and most of them are pretty one-note. Even if they're a little complicated, like... Paul Mescal's like kind of slave turned gladiator turned hero. Okay. Well, warrior turned slave turned gladiator turned hero. Like, or Pedro Pascal's like very laughable, reluctant general, which I thought was really funny. This like general character who like he knows that things are wrong in Rome and he wants to make it right, but he just doesn't know how, you know, while he's like conquering cities and taking people hostage in the name of these horrible twin emperors who are over the top for sure. But a welcome, I think, bolt of lightning in the movie. I at least enjoyed their streak of crazy. The best part really is, I think, Denzel Washington. I don't know. I'm with you. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he floats into these scenes and immediately lifts them up in a way. His tone is perfect. He seems to understand exactly the assignment. Tons of fun watching Denzel Washington in this movie. And it's a shame that Paul Mescal doesn't get more to do. But being a gladiator prisoner means, like, between scenes he's not in, he's literally sitting in a cell for the whole runtime. He's doing nothing but sitting there waiting until he gets called in to fight somebody, and then he goes back to sitting. It's a shame. Like, it doesn't need to be that way. And it doesn't make a lot of sense in the script, because he has multiple people that visit his cell, often under, like, cover of night, and they've, like, bribed the guards to, like, get in there and have a private conversation with our gladiator. And it's like, maybe y'all should have done the opposite. Maybe y'all should have got him in the movie more, like, instead of leaving him and having to get other characters to sneak their way into a scene with Paul Mescal. Like, and he just doesn't get that rage that's attributed to him. Like, Denzel's got these great monologues where he talks about how other purveyors of gladiators in Rome, some will look for power, strength. Others will look for, like, dexterity and cunning. And him, he's like, rage. That's the thing that I think truly drives the society. There's these big lofty ideals about, like, how things should work in Rome. And they start with this guy. Yes, this guy, Denzel Washington, picking this gladiator. Yeah, Dream of Rome. Very, very Megalopolis coded, actually. A dream of a new Rome, a new republic, right? But it just doesn't come through. Like, he doesn't get the space and he doesn't get the drama to make that effective. What he does get is the action, which is where Gladiator 2's bread and butter is. The combat, the Colosseum stuff, pretty much all rock solid. Couple goofy effects, though I would argue those are funnier than they are distracting, and that can enhance a film, because a good laugh is always welcome. Usually welcome.
Yeah, there's a great scene where Denzel, his character, strolls in, and he's made some strategic bets with some characters because they like to gamble, and this has worked out in his favor. And there's a point where he's so friendly to someone, but also incredibly threatening. Like, you owe me a ton of money, right? But it's in the, like, he's so nice and so friendly, but so threatening. And it's like, how does he do that? How does he find that perfect balance? And it works so well. And I think, again, Paul Mescal's doing the best with what he's been given. He looks great on screen. Like, he's got the rugged look. He's got the Roman nose. Like, the man looks perfect on screen. Unfortunately, his character's not very well written. Same thing with Pedro Pascal. I do think that this might help propel Paul Mescal into, I don't know, maybe doing some action movies or something, because he has several action scenes, and it's like, well, maybe this, he could be the next guy that, you know, like a Chris Hemsworth, you know, does combat, shoots guns, fights people, but, you know, he's got the acting chops too. So we'll see. I think it's a good audition for him to maybe get into the action genre.
I was thinking watching this, I was thinking in my head watching his performance, like, this might be the first time I've actually seen Paul Mescal in a movie when he's not, like, a disaffected small town 30 something white gay lover, right? Like, he's just like he actually at least has one romantic relationship in this film, and he's with a woman. And I was like, I think it's the first time I've seen him, like, dating a chick in a movie. Yes. That's nuts to me. But hey, shout out to his performance. Like I said, I think the movie's funnier than it is intended. Napoleon also has this effect. I think sometimes these lofty drama lines just don't quite go over the way they're meant to. And Ridley Scott will pick an odd take. It reminds me of, like, that scene in Napoleon when Joaquin Phoenix is screaming about boats out of nowhere. He's like, you told me they had boats. So goofy, over the top, doesn't really work. Gladiator 2 has a few of these moments as well, and some of the best ones come out in the combat. There is a scene with these CGI baboons that people have been roasting all weekend because they just do not look good. There's a combat scene on boats with sharks in the water, which is hilarious. They're like these CGI sharks swimming around like a James Bond villain would have, like with lasers attached to their heads. Like, a lot of that stuff's real goofy, but it's ultimately fun. And, like, when the movie slows down and manages to be tranquil, I think in the best moments where Gladiator 1 was, when Paul Mescal, like, sticks his sword in the sand and, like, dusts off his hands, like, just like Russell Crowe does in and is as seen in the poster and a lot of the marketing stuff for this. I think our YouTube thumbnail has that. That stuff works good. Like, when it slows down and, like, really takes a moment, I think it's good. But otherwise, like, it's just kind of full and a little, like, misguided. I think it just comes from a script that just needed a little bit of fine-tuning. Maybe pull a character or two out, expand a little bit more, give Paul Mescal more to do. Like, I think you got something going on here.
Yeah, another big issue with the movie and plot is that it kind of is about a whole lot of nostalgia. a whole lot of member berries. I was reminded a lot of the Force Awakens kind of thing. Like, hey, guys, remember this? Because, like, if you've seen the first Gladiator, a bunch of stuff that you've seen in that movie turns up in this. Paul Mescal does the, he picks up the sand, rubs it in saying he has a couple of executions that are in the first movie. Strength and honor, hold. I mean, just hitting all the classic. He wears, for some not really well explained reason, they still have Maximus armor and sword, and eventually you see Paul Mescal wearing it. You see this in the trailer, so that's not a spoiler. But it's just like, yeah, you guys remember Maximus? You remember Gladiator 1? Remember everything you liked in there? Here it is again. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah. Do you remember Captain America? He fought in the war. He stood for something. But can I wear his armor? No, what could I? Could I donthe A? Yeah, it's a bit of like throwing on the same armor. But like, still a good time. I do want to mention the stuff from Gladiator 1 because I have not seen Gladiator 1 in a real long time. Dr. Draper watched it before me, you watched it before going to see this. I did not. I was just going in like, let's just see what Ridley Scott brings to me, a disaffected viewer who has not watched Gladiator 1 in a long time. And the film opens with a really striking title credit sequence. It's really great, actually. It's like this hand painterly looking oil painting sequence that flashes back through previous scenes in the film, but with a really great bit of the score, like fantastic work, really gets you into it, reminds you of some of the previous stuff you saw, striking imagery. And then the second half of this movie gets really into old Gladiator stuff. And that was where I started to fall off because I was thinking, wait a second, is this somebody... Like, they'd introduce a character on screen with, like, a big flashbacky flair, some music, you know, as they walk in. And I'm like, who am I looking at? Who is that? And, of course, it's a character from the first film. But I didn't remember that because I haven't seen it in a long time. And, yeah, a lot of, like, big lines, like when they say strength and honor for the 30th time in the script, it's like, okay, pretty confident this was in the first one and I'm just not remembering it that good. Like, a lot of the big visuals from Gladiator 1 are echoed perfectly here. And, like, I guess the themes are, too. But you just don't get the same energy. Like, I saw people talking about how, boy, Russell Crowe really did manage to capture lightning in a bottle with his performance in the first one. And that's just kind of not here. In fact, there is a quite a Maximus-shaped hole in this film, really. And Paul Mescal does a good job, I think, to step to it. But it is ultimately in the shadow of its former self. Gladiator 2, I don't think, is bigger than Gladiator 1. I think it's secondary in every nature. And that's, you know, it's okay if you're a big Gladiator fan, but I just wished it had a little bit more zing, something, a little bit more pop, a tighter script, two less characters. Yeah.
It also, it doesn't really have, the score doesn't do very much. The score from the first one, it may have won best score, but the score by Hans Zimmer is a classic. Lots of very familiar themes. The big battle at the beginning of the first movie, just lots of very memorable stuff. And you get some rehashes of that, but you don't get anything new, nothing to chew on. It's a different composer, so like the score is lacking as well.
Yeah, I'm running out of things to say about it, I think, so we should probably wrap it up. Any other thoughts or recommendations, Andy?
I'm ready.
Andy, would you recommend Gladiator 2?
I would recommend it to fans of the first film. If you're a little on the fence, I would say save it for streaming or watch the highlights later on YouTube. The performances are really strong. That's what definitely carries the film. The action is pretty good. Some of the CGI doesn't look great. And but the script and plot is just kind of all over the place. It's a rehash of the first movie, and then it just kind of goes off the rails, and it's like four different movies by the end of it. So I would say probably save it for streaming unless you're really excited for it.
Yeah, I think Gladiator 2 is definitely fun in a theater, but I don't think it mandates making the time for 3 hours at the theater. You know, like I get the chase for a bigger experience, and Gladiator 2 is bigger, but I can't say it's better. I think it's a good time, and I think when it comes to streaming, you should watch it. When it shows up on HBO or Netflix or whatever on the front page for a week, and Gladiator is like number two in the world, absolutely. Throw it on. You'll have a great time. They might even have Gladiator 1 there, so you could watch it right next to it, right? Double feature. But like on its own, it's fine. Gladiator 2 is fine. And that's not bad. Doesn't mean Ridley Scott's wash. My man's got time. But it's fine. Gladiator 2 is fine. And with that, we should move into our December preview. Some upcoming stuff. December's kind of stacked this year. And like I said at the top, Andy has done an incredible job of carving out each week things that are coming out. We don't have like a musical bumper or anything attached to this, right, Andy?
We need one.
We do need some kind of holiday preview.
The monthly preview, yeah.
The monthly preview, perfect. Well, let me jump in. I'll start. First week of December, December 6th, three big films coming out. First off, Y2K. That's that Kyle Mooney written and directed script, big comedy, a bunch of kids that are having a party the night of 1999 when suddenly the clock tips over to midnight instead of all of their devices turning off and shutting down, which was expected for Y2K. Everything boots up and turns into crazy lo-fi monster demon things with like goofy wires coming out of them and stuff. Big practical effects, looks kind of fun. You've also got The Order as a 1970s cop chasing down a group of white supremacist movie that we talked about a little while back on the show, starring Jude Law and Nicholas Hoult. This is from Justin Kurzel, who previously directed that Rad Macbeth adaptation that Andy really likes, starring Michael Fassbender in 2015. Yep, yep. And then also did Assassin's Creed starring Michael Fassbender in 2016, and then never did a big studio movie again. And this is like their first real big one back. So, hey, give them a break. They got sucked into the Hollywood machine and spat back out. The Order could be cool. Lastly, Night Bitch, which is by, I want to say, director Mariel Heller. This stars Amy Adams as a disaffected mom who discovers one night that she is slowly turning into a dog. Or something like that. Her husband doesn't really understand it. I think it might be a metaphor. Looks like an odd script with an even odder title. Andy, first week of December, any hot takes before you jump into the next one?
The Order, I think, looks really interesting. I'm definitely interested to see that. I'm interested to see how much Night Bitch flops. That's a terrible title. Maybe that's probably the name of the book. But it's just, from a marketing perspective, it's like you can't. There's so many places you can't show that or say that, and it's going to be difficult. That looks real bad. Amy Adams needs a new agent. She just seems to always just be in the worst projects, and she's such a great actor. The Y2K movie looks kind of too late. That horror movie starring Rachel Zegler and Jordan Martell, and it's supposed to be, you know, a 2000s, the year 1999 when Y2K was supposed to. It's a horror comedy. That looks like a save it for streaming. For sure.
Yeah. I've got lofty hopes in Kyle Mooney because of his work on SNL and his previous work in YouTube. A lot of great Kyle Mooney sketches out there if you've never looked the guy up. But yeah, the idea is really too late. It's like, why 2K? Dude, like, I don't know. Maybe great script is the only way that movie's going to work. Really good jokes. Like, it's got to work. But otherwise, what's coming out December 13th?
On the 13th, we have Kraven the Hunter. Starring at Aaron Taylor Johnson, which is, of course, a Sony Marvel comic book film. That movie has been delayed a lot. It was supposed to come out, I think, earlier in the fall, and it's been pushed a bunch. The strikes had something to do with that, but we're finally going to be seeing that. Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim, which is the animated anime-style Lord of the Rings film, which I'm kind of interested in seeing, but it's another one that's like, oh, I'll wait till it's streaming. And then September 5th, which we haven't really talked too much about, this is about the Munich Olympics in 1972 when Israeli athletes were taken hostage. There's been a lot of media kind of created about that incident. This stars Peter Sarsgaard. It is from kind of the newsroom perspective. That's a big awards contender. I don't know if that's actually opening wide. That may be one of those things that it like actually opens wide in January or something. Zach, any thoughts on those releases?
Yeah, Kraven the Hunter looks just like another Sony Spider-Man villains movie. I don't think much of it, but if it Venom's any indication, it might do good for all I know. I don't think it's got a lot of character, but I do like Aaron Taylor Johnson. Lord of the Rings War of the Rohirrim was one of my most anticipated for this year. We talked about the end of last year, about what's coming up and what we want to see, and it hadn't really been announced yet. It was just kind of talked about. I knew it was an anime movie. I knew it was Lord of the Rings. I knew it was the first Lord of the Rings film Warner Brothers had put out since the last Hobbit film. And I knew it was coming out in December. And it was like, Lord of the Rings movie in December tells me somebody in marketing thinks that's going to be a banger. Somebody somewhere thinks Lord of the Rings movie in December is going to be hot. And now it's like kind of small release and I haven't seen much about it. And I don't think it's going to do that good, but I'm still anticipating it in the same way. Who knows? Like, it might be heat. There might be some good stuff happening there. I'm hopeful. As for September 5th, looks like a bit of an awards contender. But, dude, I totally go for that newsroom stuff. People, like, pointing at screens in the 80s. Look there! That footage! You can see the thing! And Peter Sarsgaard's like, get! Zoom in! Enhance! It's going to be a great time. Can't wait. I think it looks a lot of fun. Yeah. December 20th, two big ones coming out. I've been talking about this week, this weekend all year. Sonic the Hedgehog 3 and Mufasa the Lion King. Aptly titled Midfasa here on our outline. Thank you, Andy. I wanted to mention that. I think it's hilarious. Dude, I saw a trailer for Mufasa again in front of Wicked, and it looks so mid. It looks so mid. I don't know who wants to see that movie. What kid is beating down the door like, I gotta go see the not live action Lion King about Simba's dad, Lion King 2. Like, it just is, like, the visuals are not that striking. I know it's a Barry Jenkins joint. Like, it should be a good time. I don't know. I don't see it. And then meanwhile, like, I see Sonic the Hedgehog 3, which is all like gamer LEDs and ghost energy drink with like Keanu Reeves playing Shadow the Hedgehog with a gun. Like, it looks kind of hot, like, for kids to me. I feel like if I was a kid, if I was a kid nowadays, like, I'd be playing Roblox and I would want to go see Sonic the Hedgehog 3, not Midfasa. But like, I don't think that Disney's probably going to take the weekend anyway, because Disney and it's Lion King. What do you think, Andy?
The original Mufasa, or the original Lion King remake from 2019, is of course pre-pandemic, made over $1 billion. It was a huge, huge hit. And we thought it was pretty bad on this show. Like, it was kind of tough to sit through. This looks about the same, but yeah, I mean, people just go for it. It's Disney. It's the Lion King. They recognize the brand. So I think it'll probably make a ton of money, unfortunately. To me, Sonic the Hedgehog 3 is the better looking movie. I saw another trailer, a new trailer just dropped today for it, and it looks like so much fun. You got great voice cast with Keanu Reeves. Jim Carrey's back as Dr. Robotnik and Dr. Robotnik's dad.
Multiple Jim Carreys. Come on.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. Maybe there's enough to go around. Sonic seems a little bit, maybe aimed a little bit slightly younger audiences, and Mufasa is kind of four quadrant for everyone, kids, adults. So we'll see. And then, of course, Christmas Day, huge release as always. Christmas Day is technically the biggest day in for theaters. Like, they will make a ton of money on that day more than any day of the year. We have three big releases. We have Baby Girl, which is the Helena Ryan rom-com power dynamic thing with Nicole Kidman and Harris Dickinson. That looks like a lot of fun. Her previous movie, Bodies, 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 we reviewed on the show, and that was a lot of fun. Of course, the long-anticipated Nosferatu by, is it Roger or Robert Eggers? I can never remember. Robert Eggers.
Robert, yeah.
Which is, of course, technically a remake, but it's an updated version of Nosferatu, starring Lily Rose Depp and Bill Skarsgård as Count Orlok, the vampire himself. That looks so scary. I'm so good. They're getting their own popcorn bucket, the popcorn sarcophagus that you can get for probably $35, not popcorn not included. And then to finish out that day is A Complete Unknown, which is the Bob Dylan biopic starring Timothy Chalamet, Elle Fanning, directed by James Mangold. That's another big awards contender. People are saying Timmy's a lock for the best actor nomination, might possibly win. So those are three big releases on Christmas Day itself.
I was dying of popcorn sarcophagus, dude. It's so funny. Such a complicated term for a complicated idea for a popcorn bucket, dude. Like, it's so great. Nosferatu looks awesome. I think I'm probably overhyped for Nosferatu. I think it might be too scary. I'm looking at new trailers. I'm like, dude, Robert Eggers is talking about how he wants vampires to be scary again. I'm like, there's a chance this is so hard horror. Like, people walk away going, it's too much. And I hope, like, it can't be too much for me. Like, I'm probably overhyped for Nosferatu. Baby Girl
Take the
looks
whole family on Christmas Day.
Baby Girl does not look particularly cinematic. Looks a little bit like a streamer, but it's probably great performances and Uncomplete Unknown. Kind of the same thing. Like, does not look hugely cinematic. I feel like I could watch that on HBO at home.
Dewey Cox.
Timmy's probably getting the Oscar for it. Yeah, like, it's a music biopic, right? Like, I'm sure it'll be great. Edward Norton balding. I can't wait. And that's December, dude. It's stacked. Like, it's so stacked. I can't believe how many movies are coming out. We will do our absolute best to cover everything on this show. And anything we don't get to, fortunately, we can trail off in January and February because we're going to need it. Like, things will dry up fast after this. January looks okay at the movies. February's looking weak. But December's going to be a good time. If we missed any, or there's any that you want to see in particular, you know you can write into the show. Right? I'm going to use this as a shameless opportunity to plug our email, right? mail@oscarfilmreview.com. You can write on the show and let us know what you think of everything. Or, of course, you can just comment on this video or any other videos or anything we got going on. But December's going to be busy, and I really appreciate Andy putting this together. So thank you, Andy. If I had an audience sound, I'd play it right here. Yeah. I don't. And I think my
no problem
keeps me from actually clapping on mic. But, you know, just in general. Anyway, we should move into the last film of the episode. Excited to talk about this one. Didn't know a lot about it going in, but we know a lot about it now. I'm going to be taking the summer in this, so please excuse any clumsy delivery. The movie is Wicked. Return to the Land of Oz in Wicked, the film adaptation of the historic Broadway musical starring Cynthia Erivo as Elphaba, our lead, the woman who would go on to become the Wicked Witch of the West, and Ariana Grande as Galinda or Glinda. I'm still not quite sure. Glinda the Good Witch, right? Who comes down in a bubble, Doug. Wicked is from director John M. Chu, formerly directed Crazy Rich Asians and In the High. This is a lofty musical adaptation. It is nearly 3 hours long. I think it's just about as long as the full play. And it's only the first half. Only goes up to intermission. Then you got to come back next year. And Warner Brothers didn't tell anybody. You just find out when you go in or you hear about it on a podcast like this one. Wicked is long and it is big. And it is the story of Elphaba arriving at Shiz University the day it opens, a prestigious school in the Land of Oz, alongside Glinda, who is looking to become a sorceress. Upon a display of some great power and possibly terrible, Elphaba immediately is brought under the wing of Madame Morrible, local sorceress trainer at the school, played by Michelle Yeoh, much to the dismay of Glinda. The two of them end up becoming roommates through a funny happenstance. A bit of a rivalry begins, and once they begin to understand each other, they decide that they have to go to see the wonderful Wizard of Oz in all of his great and terrible power in the Emerald City. They hop a train, travel there, meet Jeff Goldblum, the wonderful Wizard of Oz, where some things go down. It's really all in the trailer. I'm not sure I'm spoiling a lot. But anyway, Elphaba has to take off and get out of there. She grabs a broom and her trusty hat, sings Defying Gravity, and heads to the skies. It is a lofty, lofty adaptation. And for what's here, I think it's really good. Because I don't know a lot about Wicked. I didn't know anything about Wicked going into this, actually. And believe it or not, I didn't read any of what I just said. I just remembered it all from seeing the movie because our characters are memorable. And our characters are silhouettes of unique individuals. And everybody is different. And everything is well established. John M. Chu has done really fantastic work here. And I feel like I've talked too much about it already. Andy, what did you think of Wicked?
So first I wanted to say that I'm not really a huge fan of this musical. I remember back in 2004 when Wicked the musical was hitting the stage and everyone was obsessed with it. It was a bit like Hamilton was about 10 years ago. And I just could not get into it. But I really ended up loving this movie. I thought it was an incredible production. The music, the acting, the song and dance numbers, the sets, everything works. And it is long. Like, it should not work as well as it does. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes, but the pacing just goes. Like, it never feels stale. I never got bored. It moves, and it's so impressive. And this was like a who's who. Everyone in Hollywood wanted this role, and in the music industry. I was looking up Lady Gaga auditioned for this, Katy Perry auditioned for this, big Amy Adams, Lea Michele, a bunch of people who do sing and don't really sing. No one was ever going to out-sing Ariana Grande, though. I'll say that much. But everyone wanted these two roles, and they got, and who we got is fits it so well. I didn't realize kind of the serious nature of this musical and the book. This is kind of about fascism and propaganda and the dangers thereof. And I had, from our very first story, like, we meet Glinda, and she's like, oh, yes, the witch is dead. She's so evil, and she's so bad. And then we get a flashback, and we're like, wait a minute. The story doesn't really quite connect. It's almost about, like, the how history itself can be used as a tool of propaganda. So I wasn't really prepared for the serious nature of some of the themes in here as well. So it comes together really well. I was really impressed.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about not knowing where it's going. Like, I didn't either. I wasn't really familiar with the adaptation. I knew it was an Oz prequel, and I liked The Wizard of Oz just fine. I actually rewatched it just a few months ago. Rock solid. Great time. And this movie, even though it's not from the same company, we don't actually have our Ruby Red Slippers because it didn't come from MGM Warner Brothers as a Universal joint. Also does not connect to the Disney Oz universe. At one point, I thought they were going to flashback to James Franco from Oz the Great and Powerful, the Sam Raimi film from a few years ago. Not the same studio. Can't do that, right? Oz is overall. Copyright isn't a thing in the land of Oz, except for the Ruby Slippers. MGM owns those. But outside of that, like, there's a lot this movie has to do. It has to pay homage to the Broadway musical and give it its flowers. It has to speak cinematically to the Oz that audiences are familiar with and present us with somewhere we've been before. And it has to defy expectation, right? How does the Wicked Witch end up not being so wicked after all? Or how does she end up becoming the thing that we believe to be wicked if she is that? The answer, like you said, Andy, systemic problems, right? What evil do we prop up that is worse than the Wicked Witch? How does she get to be who she is? Well, fascism and a little bit of racism. Animalism? I did not expect any of the animal plot in this, I should say, and I don't want to talk too much about it. It's not that it's spoilers, but it's definitely not in the trailer, and if you've seen the musical, you know what I'm talking about. That kind of came out of left field and takes the movie in a strange direction, but it is so pleasant watching Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande work together on screen. I can't believe how good they are in this movie. I've seen a lot of the interviews. I know they can both sing. I didn't think that was going to be a problem. They genuinely hold attention and have dramatic and comedic chemistry in ways that is really charming and works fantastic. I think Ariana Grande gets the edge in the performance only because Glinda is so much more challenging of a character. I understand Erivo's got big themes on her shoulders, but ultimately it results in a lot of being quiet and being shy and being pushed back for the first half of the movie until she starts to come out of her shell. Ariana Grande, meanwhile, has to suck up all the attention in the room all the time and hold that attention and have the charisma and the vitality to do so. And she does a great job. She's tremendous. I can't believe her last big acting role was in like 2019. And now she is functional co-star of this film and holds it down great. Really, really funny performance, really charming performance, very dramatic. Same with Erivo, like fantastic work from these two. I can't believe how good they are in it. Like I figured maybe they'd be fine. They'd work good. But compared to like Paul Mescal at Gladiator 2, who has nothing to do the whole movie, like these two have to do everything. They have to put the whole movie on their backs and they do a great job. Like fantastic.
Yeah. Ariana Grande is so good in this. I figured she would be, I knew she'd be able to sing like you. I didn't really think much past that. But she nails the character of Glinda so well because Glinda is so, she's so full of herself. She's so selfish, at least in the beginning of the film. And she is so funny. Like there's so many throwaway lines and throwaway gestures. And it's just like micro acting that Ariana Grande just nails and would be real easy to miss or do too much. And again, like she finds like just the right tune for it. And again, meanwhile, Cynthia Erivo has to do kind of the stoic, you know, it's a little bit of a stand-in for racism or like othering because she's green. She's different. Everyone laughs at her. Everyone jokes at you. She's the joke of the town, and she has to deal with a lot of that in a much more serious way. And they both just hit their notes bitch perfectly. So our performances are rock solid. They definitely got the best for these roles.
Yeah. Additionally, I want to mention Michelle Yeoh as Madame Morrible, who is good. I think Michelle, she's good. She's fine. I don't think Madame Morrible at least has too much to do in part one here. She's functionally just like a supervisor who inspire the girls and like inspire them to grow within themselves and like, you know, act, tap into their magic and figure themselves out. But like, she's fine. I hope she has more to do in part two because I think she's a lot of fun. Jeff Goldblum is the wonderful Wizard of Oz. Pretty delightful. Every time I see Jeff Goldblum in a movie, I think, oh, he's just going
to
be being Jeff Goldblum.
Born to play it.
Yeah, talking funny, but like, no, he kind of works great. He's like this Walt Disney kind of raconteur who's like, hey, come on in and look at my big machine face I've built. And oh yeah, come look at this. And this is the Oz of tomorrow that I believe in. Like, kind of totally works great. Ethan Slater as Bach is good. you know, charming. Certainly a silhouette. He's got the frizzy hair and he wears a goofy sweater and he's just like gushing over Glinda, who's very sweet, but obviously would much rather Bok spend time with Nessa, Elphaba's sister, who is disabled, who is a weird left turn in the movie who I also did not expect and is not featured in much of the marketing. Like when I watched the trailer for Wicked and thought, God, the whole movie isn't here. Most of it's in there, but like you'd be surprised at the stuff that isn't. And like additional performances from like, Jonathan Bailey as Fierro, Peter Dinklage. Bowen Yang and Bronwyn James as Glinda's like two sidekick characters are also really funny.
Hilarious.
And manage to meet her energy a lot. Like they'll be in the background behind her, like tuttering or like, you know, thinking something's embarrassing and like really funny. Like they give it a lot of space. Really surprised at how funny it is. And I know a musical's usually funny, especially big ones like this. Hamilton's got some good laughs, but like this one like really translates well to screen. And I think it's because John M. Chu is so good at using the language of film to adapt a musical in a way that feels so native to the screen. Like he uses the camera to take us into these locations, into these places, to get a good close up on the characters, like to really lean in when one of them's just about to break and cry in front of everybody, you know, like pull back when the song gets big, use jump cuts. There's split screen in a couple of these songs, like where it literally draws a line down the middle and shows us two different things at the same time, like using editing and the language of film to show us something we can't see on stage, like makes this feel special and makes this feel unique and keeps that runtime short. It's edited real tight. There's a lot of cuts in this movie. Good God, lots of cuts.
Yeah, from what I understand, the movie ends where the musical kind of the first half is finished, the intermission. I guess it's Defying Gravity. That's the end of the first half, so that's what we get. There's also some very, very touching moments. There's a couple of places like, you'll tear up. People in my theater, that they were crying. It was a good time. Which, by the way, I had, it was like Barbie. People were dressed up in pink and green, and they had like their bedazzled shoes. I mean, it was like a whole event. So a really good time, but also some very touching moments, which again, there's both ends of the acting spectrum they have to do. They do all the comedy and the big songs, and there's also the smaller, more intimate moments that also work really well.
Yeah, it's funny because like so much of the Wicked soundtrack is memorable, like Defying Gravity. And then when you get into watching it, you get halfway through it and you remember like into the song, oh yeah, Popular is also on this track, like which is great. Like a lot of good music on there. And then as Andy mentioned previously, like there's some B-sides on the Wicked musical set list that are fine. And when the movie like breaks into a song and breaks out of the world of the film a little bit, and you end up watching one of these numbers for a few minutes, if it's not like good stuff, like Popular or Defying Gravity or even like Jonathan Bailey's Dancing Through Life, which is fine, it does slow down the movie a little bit, and that may be the time somebody's getting up and going to the bathroom. But like I'm impressed at how well this movie moves. At 2 hours and 45 minutes, on paper it's way too long. By the time it hits credits, I would have watched another hour to wrap it up. I would have stuck around like for more of what this movie is offering, and that's meaningful. Like look at me, I'm not the target audience for Wicked. You got attention retention, like I'm remembering all these details and characters and names and locations. I'm looking forward to watching more of it. Like for all intents and purposes, the Wicked movie worked great. It might work too good. Like I think word of mouth might carry this movie over $1 billion.
Yeah, it definitely might have some really good legs. Like I said, its only competition is going to be Moana 2 for at least the next month. Which is heavy competition, but at the same time, it got a head start. It was going to come out the same day as Moana this Wednesday, but they wisely backed it up to just get a jump on the box office, get word of mouth out. And, you know, it's the holidays. People got a lot of time. Most people are going to see both anyways. But yeah, it works so well. And when I saw that two hours, 40 minute runtime, I was a little scared myself. And funny enough, I expected Gladiator to be the movie I was more excited about, and that I ended up having some boring moments in that. I heard someone sleeping in my theater in Gladiator 2. Not the case with Wicked at all.
Yeah. One thing I did want to mention before we get to formal reviews, regarding the lighting and coloring, even blocking, like I've seen a lot of film heads on Twitter getting technical with the trailer and being like, this movie's color looks washed out. Why is everything backlit? And they're just using studio lights. Look, when you take screenshots of this movie and put it together, like I agree. There's certainly some critique in like the presentation and how it looks and why colors might look a little washed out. When you watch the film, it's so consistent across the runtime, you don't care because you fall into the world of the film. Like John M. Chu puts you under a spell and it works. It's not that noticeable when you're watching the whole movie. Like I've definitely seen people say, oh, the blocking doesn't work here, or the scenes in these cuts don't, like the kinetic energy doesn't carry over. I'm like, that, I'm telling you, like it works. This movie's going to make a bunch of money. It's going to keep making money, and they're going to make part two, and that's going to make a bunch of money too. Like, for all intents and purposes, this is a W, like all around. So if there's anybody out there who feels like the technicals don't add up, like I'm sure there's conversation for that. But for the most part, this movie looks great and sounds great and plays great and is smart and funny and charming in every way it needs to be. It's genuinely impressive, like how well it works and how positive the energy seems to be coming from everybody involved in the production. Everybody on set wants to give the original its flowers and pay homage to what came before, and also bring that same sort of like lightning in a bottle energy that made the Broadway musical so popular in the first place, but to film. Like, it is a lofty goal to make a Wicked adaptation and make it good. It's easy to adapt something and make it mid, right? It's almost easier than making it
all
bad.
The time.
Yeah, it happens all the time. It is difficult to do it well, and Wicked does it really well, like super well. I'm just really, really impressed at how good this movie is.
Yeah, I don't really have too much more to add other than, like I said, it was really blown away. It's definitely going to be a big awards contender. Definitely technical awards, acting stuff. I'm sure it's going to get a Best Picture nomination. It definitely is one of the best movies of the year. Like it almost reminded me of like old Marvel, where it's like, yeah, they're going to spend $250 million and it's going to be worth every penny.
Yeah, you had mentioned that last night. We were talking about this and in that same way, I didn't think of that when I was watching it, but like there's ample ground here to build more. Like if Wicked Part 2 has the same kind of vibrance and energy that this does and wraps it up in a satisfying way, like there is no reason Universal can't kick off another Oz movie in a couple of years. 100%. Like if you can keep this going, like I if you can figure out the algorithm that makes this movie work, the performances and the fine lines and the scripts and the dedication and the care, like you can build an Oz universe out of it. And I wonder if that might be where we're going. That would be nuts, but we'll see. Many have tried, right? Many still try, like Marvel. But for now, sure, we're going to stick with Wicked Part 1. Not actually titled Part 1. It was originally Wicked Part 1, and they changed it to just Wicked. I'm assuming Wicked Part 2 will just be Wicked Part 2, right?
It does say Part 1 on the title card.
Yeah, it's true. IMDb's got it as formerly Wicked Part 1. I didn't know what to call it for the episode. I figured I'd just call it Wicked. But you're right. The title card does give the Part 1. I wondered how they'd do that. Like, if they'd be like Denis Villeneuve's Dune, where it just pops up like at the bottom, like Part 1.
It'll probably have a, you know what? Because they don't like to do Part 1 and 2. It'll have some sort of different subtitle. As like Wicked Death of Oz or something. Not that, but you know.
I know.
It'll have some. It'll be something in that world.
Or something. Yeah, right. Like exactly. Something that will get people in theaters. Anyway, Andy, would you recommend Wicked?
Yes, absolutely. Highly, highly recommend. One of the best films of the year for kids and families. It's long, but it works. Incredible performances from Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande and our supporting cast as well. The effects, the song and dance numbers, all of it works incredibly well, more than it probably should or that I anticipated it would. It's going to be one of the biggest hits of the year. Highly recommend.
Yeah. It's kind of a banger. Wicked's a certified hood classic, dude. Go see Wicked. It's great. Take your parents, take the family. Everybody can go see it. A lot of families in my theater. Everybody's really cool at the screening. Nobody was singing. If it runs through December and people do sing-alongs, we're going to see more. We're going to see memes. We're going to see GIFs. Like, and it's all valid. That's I think the best thing about Wicked is it invites you in to celebrate that energy too. Come see Wicked. Everyone's invited to see Wicked. Nobody is pushed away here. Nobody is outside of this group. It's all inclusive. Everyone come in. Come hang out and celebrate what makes this stuff great. And like come celebrate the same sort of energy that I think Wicked is bringing to the stage and screen. It's good. It's good. Wicked's great. Probably a top 10 of the year. So Good Lord, that's episode 274 of Off Script, Andy. We're flying through the year. We're taking next week off for the holiday. I requested that one. I know we just took a week off because we had stuff going on, but hey, you know what? Your boys need to celebrate Thanksgiving the only way they know how, by going out of town and not sticking around and watching movies. So that's me. What are we watching when we get back on the 10th? The 10th? I think the 10th. December 10th.
Yes, December 10th. Yeah. We'll be back sometime that week. Moana 2. Hits theaters this week, November 25th, which is a Wednesday, right before Thanksgiving Day. So it has a nice 5-day run for the weekend. That's the huge release now. And then we'll be looking to see to watch something else. We got to check streaming, see what else. So TBD on that. Some FYI releases on November 27th. Maria comes out. That's the Maria Callas biopic featuring Angelina Jolie. And a small film called The Seat of the Sacred Fig, which I'm kind of excited about. An Iranian film also comes out on the 27th. Some smaller things, just if you happen to be interested in those. But we'll be back on the 10th with Moana 2 and to be decided.
Yeah, excited about Seat of the Sacred Fig as well. Big, bold cinema heads out there will know. Like, that one looks like a banger. Moana 2 is probably going to make $1 billion, for sure. And I saw the other day that they posted like the big title track from that movie. And they were like, you can watch it now. I'd rather wait and see it in theaters so I can feel the moment my brain realizes that this is the song, this is the Frozen song, this is the Moana song, this is going to be the big title track that Disney tries to push. Why watch it early when I could just watch it in theaters, right? And why watch it in theaters when you could listen to us tell you about what we thought on Off Script Film Review every single week, except for next week because we're off for the holiday. We'll be back on the 10th with episode 275 talking about Moana 2 and something else. Best way to keep up with us for when that comes around is just subscribe to the show on wherever you're watching us right now. If you're watching on YouTube, you can subscribe there. If you're one of our audio listeners on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartMedia, you can subscribe somewhere around there, I'm sure. You can also rate and review, which would be a big help, by the way, a big help for podcasters out there. You can comment wherever you're able. Also helps engagement, right? Every little bit helps. There's no not helping here as long as you're engaging with the show. We're on Facebook, Twitter, X, Instagram, TikTok. We're on all the usual social media places you can find us there.
We need to jump on Blue Sky.
Need to jump on Blue Sky. That's right. BSKY.app. God, considering we have a domain, now that I think about it, we could probably add ourselves as Dr.
Right.
Draper and Zach at Oscar.
Live production happening.
Hey, watch out. You heard it here first in episode 274. Anyway, yes, you can find us on all these social media places. You can find us on our website, OscarFilmReview.com, where we're posting additional clips, interviews, reviews, just other stuff we got going on. And you can write us directly, correspondence direct at mail at offscriptfilmreview.com. I think that wraps up everything. We'll see you in a couple weeks on Off Script episode 275, the home of bold cinema. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for watching.